Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we examine the second Democrat debate where Biden is the focal point. Bill de Blasio talks about taxing the hell out of the rich. Cory Booker is worried about something. What is he worried about? We'll talk about it. And Senator Harris continues on her path to misrepresent the most successful president in my lifetime and arguably in the last 100 years, and some would say in American history. One quick thing, give us that subscribe, leave us those review, buckle up. It's a full show here on the Charlie Kirk Show. A recent Gallup survey shows Americans worry about burglary more than almost any other crime. It's really amazing. I take this very seriously, so listen to this very closely. More than mugging, more than terrorism, more than car theft, and even murder. According to studies, just over 10% of break-ins are planned beforehand. The rest are spur of the moment, crimes of opportunity. In other words, totally random and unpredictable. If that sounds worrisome, it should worry you. What's really crazy is that only 1 in 5 homes, this is ridiculous, have home security. Maybe because most companies really don't make it easy. For the property that I own and the properties I care about, I use SimpliSafe. I'll tell you what, I've tried all these other security services. It takes months of them coming to your house. They got to look through everything. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't work. This is why I use SimpliSafe. It's the top choice. All the property I care about is protected by SimpliSafe. Hands down, it's the best. SimpliSafe protects your whole home, every window, room, and door, with 24/7 monitoring for just a fraction. That's right, just a fraction of the cost. And look, their police dispatch system is 3.5 times faster because they use video verification. It's won a ton of awards from CNET to the New York Times Wirecutter. Prices are always super fair and honest. Around-the-clock monitoring is just $15 a month. You can visit simplisafe.com/Charlie. You'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. Go now and be sure you go to simplisafe.com/Charlie so they know our show sent you. That's simplisafe.com/Charlie. What's up, everybody? I hope you had a wonderful evening and you did not have to watch the Democrat presidential debates. I watched the debates, so what? You don't have to. That's right. I watched the Democrat presidential debates, so hopefully you can have an enjoyable night of peace and prosperity and not have to deal with former Vice President Joe Biden going up against Senator Kamala Harris. Or is it Kamala Harris? Mr. Producer, I always screw it up. Kamala. Everyone has their own way of it. I think there's only one right way to say it. Everyone has their own opinion of the right way to say it. But the kind of my immediate reaction to the whole thing is Biden was the fulcrum point of the entire debate. Biden was the focal point and the fulcrum. Everything gravitated around Joe Biden. It was really the tale of two halves, or dare I say, the tale of three gaffes. And look, it's very easy to use these kind of mistakes as cheap political attacks. It's easy and tempting to want to use these gaffes, if you will, as a way to attack political candidates of which you disagree. However, when someone like former Vice President Joe Biden routinely makes gaffes, when someone like former Vice President Joe Biden has made a habit out of misspeaking. In fact, his whole career has been riddled with misspeaking, and he's trying to be someone who's going to try to bring back decency to the American political dialogue. I think it's actually perfectly fair when he says President Booker, or that he wants 8 more years of Trump, or that this is my favorite. He tried to explain, I mean, poor guy. Wait, is it poor guy or not? Because we should actually talk about this, whether or not we should feel sorry for Joe Biden or not. That's actually one of my first questions of, does Joe Biden warrant our pity? And my answer is actually no. So my immediate reaction is, oh, poor guy. Then I think to myself, wait a second. This guy sold out our country to China so his son could get rich. Former Vice President Joe Biden went to Ukraine and bullied Ukrainian government officials so that his son would not be investigated for very shady business deals there. Former Vice President Joe Biden has praised segregationists. Former Vice President Joe Biden was the number two to one of the most disastrous presidencies in American history, of course, the Obama presidency, if not the most disastrous presidency in the last 100 years. And then, so I'm kind of correcting myself. Poor guy, not poor guy. I say not poor guy. He tries to explain to the audience. I could just see it right here. So you have former Vice President Joe Biden, you know, getting prepped for the debate, and some millennial staffer comes up and they say, okay, Vice President, Mr. Vice President, remember, you got to get this in because this will get us all the younger voters and this will get us to collect all the data. you have to make sure that you say, text Joe to 303030. And he says, what's that again? Say it again. Text Joe to 303030. Okay, say it one more time. And you could probably tell he rehearsed it 30 times, right? Okay, so I say, text Joe to 303030. Yes, Mr. Vice President, it's 303030. 303030. And he says, oh, okay, I'll do it. And he totally butchers it. He totally screws it up. And actually, I have to say, I love the internet at times. The internet is just a beautiful, just canvas of creativity. So some very entrepreneurial, self-directed individual by the name of Josh took the website that Joe is supposed to say as a call to action for texting, and created a Josh for America Exploratory Committee website. So if you actually go to joe30330.com, which is actually supposed to be, you're supposed to say, text Joe to 30330. By the way, don't do that right now. You're going to text anyone. Text the Donald Trump campaign or text Turning Point USA. You can text 5440 to TPUSA. Text something else besides the Joe Biden campaign. But he screwed it up so miserably that now he's one of the biggest jokes on the internet. Well-deserved, Joe Biden. Anyway, let's listen to the gaffe right here of Joe Biden trying to explain to the millennials how to text his name to a specific number, and he does so quite miserably.
If you agree with me, go to Joe30330 and help me in this fight. Thank you very much.
So that's, you saw right there, you know, former vice president, you heard right there, I should say, former Vice President Joe Biden tried to collect more data, if you will. You could just see the young digital staffer. Right now, the head of digital for the Joe Biden campaign is having a very long night. Can you imagine trying to explain to Vice President Joe Biden, excuse me, Mr. Vice President, it's not a website, it's texting. But it's all on the smartphone, isn't it? No, it's different. You have to have people text in. You could just imagine the gymnastics that they're doing right now to try to explain to Joe Biden that he screwed it up. So it's going to be a very long night for the digital director. And so I try to not get too focused on the gaffes because everyone makes them. I've made mistakes speaking. However, this is a pattern. It shows that Joe Biden is not up for the fight. And I will say that Joe Biden had a good comeback from where he started. I mean, Joe Biden started miserably. I mean, he was, and I don't mean this in any insulting way, but he just looked as if time has passed him by. It just looked as if he was not on his A game. He was not prepared. He did not have the energy or the spirit, the charisma, or the stamina, quite honestly, to be able to keep up with Senator Kamala Harris or Senator Harris, who was going back and forth. And you can kind of see that CNN wanted this for the ratings, the 2.0 Vice President Biden versus Senator Harris. And it was a little bit more tepid, if you will, a little less prosecutorial than it was in the first debate. And you could start to see that Vice President Joe Biden wasn't up to the snuff whatsoever. And then as the debate went on, as Senator Kamala Harris was actually cross-examined by people like Tulsi Gabbard, of which I agree with her on, I think, one or two issues, and then she goes all these wacko directions, all of a sudden Joe Biden kind of got his spirit back. But he actually didn't perform that well. It's just the bar was set so unbelievably low that anything beyond that looks like a massive victory. Look, he was old, bumbling. He kept saying anyways as soon as the moderator cut him off. Just made him look really weak while everyone bossed them around and wouldn't be interrupted by the moderator. So all the other candidates, such as Senator Harris, would just push back against the moderator and say, no, I'm going to keep talking till you turn my mic off, effectively. Vice President Biden has gotten this horrible advice that he has to be polite to the extreme of weakness. And so he just looks so futile. He just looks tepid, and again, he had a better recovery towards the end. But it does goes to show that Vice President Biden and his lead of the Democrat field is worrying other candidates, that he is now the focal point. So here's the question I'm going to ask the audience of the Charlie Kirk Show. Can Biden sustain this? I mean, we're 185-ish days more or less away from the Iowa caucus. Can he really sustain this for another 185 days? Or is he going to keep on saying, yeah, we're going to have President Booker 8 more years of Trump and go to joe30330.com? I mean, again, it is very clear that he almost was relieved that he was getting cut off by the moderators. He was almost happy. He was almost pleased that the moderators were taking time away from him. It was almost like, whoa, okay, I get to keep my lead. For any of you sport fans out there, any sport fans out there, what happens when you play prevent defense? Let's say you're up 28-7. By the way, college football is coming back. This is why August is one of my favorite months of the year, because at the end of August, college football is back. The greatest institution, one of the greatest institutions that America has to offer is college football. The NFL has just slipped in recent years. College football is amazing, whether it be the recruiting, whether it be the packed stadiums, the record crowds, the hungry athletes, the innovative plays, the come-from-behind victories. The way they do overtime is so much better than the NFL. I love college football. College football is an amazing American institution. Nowhere else in the world do you have secondary education athletics be this big of a deal. I mean, in Europe, they're fascinated that we congregate the way we do, and we're so obsessed with college football. But we know, those of you college football fans, you're up 28-7 in the fourth quarter, and you stop blitzing, and you play prevent defense. Are you really going to be, is that the best way to win the game? And any football fan or any football coach will tell you, no, you have to play to win. Like, you play prevent defense, you're preventing yourself to win. And that's exactly the sense I get from Joe Biden, is I got this big lead. No one here can really compete with me. I'm going to let them all tear each other up. I'm going to win the next 185 days. I don't see that. You're not going to be able to coast yourself to a victory when people hate this president as much as they do. You're not going to be able to coast yourself to victory when people have this sort of rage, this kind of fury, and this kind of intent of destruction towards President Donald Trump. And again, he had a better finish, but it's not saying much. He did not win the debate. And again, a lot of the cable pundits, it just goes to show that the immediacy of it, whatever happens in the immediate forethought ends up getting to be the reality. He did not have a good night. He saved himself from a horrendous campaign-ending night, but he did not have, I don't think he had a night that he should even be proud of. And look, here's the other thing, is that the big problem with Vice President Biden's strategy is he can't allow others to tear themselves apart, because they're all going to try to take him down. Is that the more that he thinks that they're going to do a crossfire and just essentially a mutually assured destruction, what we saw tonight is they're going to put Biden on trial, that they're going to put Biden to stand the test against every single issue. And he was fumbling around the most when it came to healthcare. He was forced to defend the indefensible. So can we just make something perfectly clear, is that on the first night of the debate, we had Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Bernie Sanders, who are the Bolshevik wing of the Democrat Party versus the Blue Dog Democrat wing of the Democrat Party. And the Bolshevik wing of the Democrat Party and the Blue Dog Democrat wing of the Democrat Party have something in common. They forget to mention to the American people that the Democrat Party completely and fundamentally destroyed healthcare as we know it. They passed Obamacare in 2010. I mean, it might have been late 2009, but they passed Obamacare with zero Republican votes. They passed Obamacare as a pure partisan measure. They own the healthcare catastrophe in this country. Republicans do not own it. Yes, Republicans failed to pass a healthcare fix because of the late Senator John McCain, who went thumbs down. And I thought that was a horrible thing that he did. A horrible thing that he did. And look, when you talk about healthcare in general, there's a difference between health insurance and healthcare. Obamacare was a takeover and government control of the health insurance industry. There are over 28 new taxes that were actually added onto Obamacare, such as medical excise taxes and the individual mandate tax, which, thank you, President Trump, for repealing the individual mandate tax as part of the GOP tax bill. The intent of Obamacare was never to fix American healthcare. The intent of Obamacare was never to fix healthcare. It was to get us closer to healthcare calamity and catastrophe, so we could eventually have nationalization and centralization. President Obama lied time and time again when it came to Obamacare. He said, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And Vice President Biden stood right beside him and helped him talk about those, help him defend those lies. In fact, when Obamacare was passed, Vice President Biden went back to the gaffe machine and said, this is a big effing deal. Remember that? Again, a lot of people use salty language, so I'm not going to hold that against him, but it was colorful, to say the least, that when you sign a piece of healthcare legislation, that's what you decide to use. Again, it was a big deal because it destroyed American healthcare as we know it. This is really important because as we remember those times, we were in the middle of a financial crisis. We were in the middle of a recession. And what do Democrats want to do? They want to take over 1/6 of the American economy. And here's just some numbers on Obamacare. Under Joe Biden's failed Obamacare plan, premiums in Michigan, where the debate was actually being held in the state of Michigan, in the city of Detroit, premiums rose 90% from 2013 to 2017. So the question should be, why should Michigan be forced to choose between the failed policies of the radical socialist policies of the future? I mean, to kind of word that a little bit better, why should Michigan be forced to choose between the failed policies of the past or the radical socialist policies of the future? And I tweeted something similar to this, and that's exactly the question. And look, so number one, the Democrats put forth this lie that say, oh, Republicans want to take people's health care away. Fact check, totally untrue. Fact check, lie, I should say. Republicans are the ones that are actually fighting to be able to keep people on their private health insurance plans. You know, here's another kind of fact for you. Most people are actually quite happy with their health insurance, that most people have pretty good employer-provided health insurance. There's people that don't. And I think one way that we actually reform the system is get away from employer-provided health insurance and actually get to patient-driven health insurance. But when it comes to health insurance and it comes to health care, they're two completely different things. Did you know that President Trump right now is actually fighting for price transparency? Do you know that President Trump is actually fighting to have hospitals be required to list their prices on a menu, if you will, so that when people go into the hospital for treatment, that they're able to see the difference in prices, that they're actually to see what things cost, and they can actually have conversations about procedures before they happen, that they know that an Advil is going to cost $50. President Trump signed an executive order around it, and President Trump is trying to hold the hospital lobby and the pharmaceutical lobby accountable for their lack of results that they've delivered to the American people when it comes to prices. President Trump has zeroed in on the healthcare issue, and the Democrats are intentionally demagoguing it. And what's their solution? The solution of Senator Harris is Medicare for all. Just give away a bunch of stuff to more people, completely and totally nationalize our healthcare industry. They want to turn our healthcare into the DMV, the VA, and the post office, which, again, these are the most dysfunctional parts of our government. They want to make healthcare even more inefficient. You think healthcare is screwed up now? Just wait until you have someone from the TSA running your medical procedure. Has anyone ever been happy with the TSA? The TSA, again, this might have been one of George Bush's biggest failures. I'm a huge critic of the Bush presidency because they got away with so much in conservative circles that if Obama would have created the TSA, we would never have let him live it down. Yet President Bush creates the TSA. Oh, yeah, okay, it's for safety. Okay, first of all, the TSA, they're not even good at their jobs. I mean, I go through some of these TSA things. I say, wait a second, I have two water bottles. They didn't even catch it. I thought they have this big water bottle restriction. Second of all, some of them seem like nice enough people. They don't work hard. They're not worried about getting the lines to move quicker. They couldn't care less if you sit in line for 20 or 30 minutes. And actually, I've become kind of immune to it because I have TSA pre. I travel so much. I'm basically flying every single day. You know, I have clear and TSA pre, so I can glide through the line pretty quickly. And so thank goodness. I used to have to sit in those lines when I first started Turning Point USA, and I was traveling from city to city, and I didn't yet have TSA pre, and I wasn't approved yet. I mean, boy, I had to sit through those 30 and 40 minute lines and take off my shoes for no reason, take off my belt for no reason, and take out the laptop. And you can kind of see the incompetency of the people that run the TSA. I mean, some of these people would not be able to be hired at a post office. I mean, my goodness. And there's no accountability. None of these people are fired. There's no spirit. There's no energy. There's no passion to try to move the line quicker. So I want you to imagine these people running our healthcare system. I mean, if you think healthcare is screwed up now, imagine the TSA running lines at the emergency room. And by the way, the emergency room is totally and completely screwed up. I mean, I experienced the emergency room firsthand back in late January when I had a horrible back injury. They literally made me lay on a bench. And you think to yourself, this could be even worse. I mean, if they have Medicare for all, it could be even worse. My Mr. Producer's kind of laughing right now because he actually recommended I went to the specific hospital I went to. It's okay, Mr. Producer. All is forgiven. It makes for a good segment right now. No worries. We are good. So anyway, when we talk about healthcare, there's a difference between healthcare, which is actually what is being done to you when you have a broken leg, a broken limb, when you have a stomach ache, when you have a kidney stone, versus health insurance. And the biggest problem with health insurance, first of all, let's just dispel this myth that we don't have universal coverage in America. There's over 80 million people. That's right, 80 million people on Medicaid right now in America. 80 million people. So 80 million people. Medicaid, by the way, is health insurance for the poor. Medicaid doesn't work that well. Medicaid actual approval ratings are quite low. Medicaid is what people with low incomes. So think about that. 80 million people, 80 million children, some elderly people. You can have both Medicaid and Medicare. Medicare is exclusively for the elderly. But you can have both Medicaid and Medicare if you fall below a certain income level. My grandma, before she passed, had both Medicaid and Medicare because she fell below a certain income level. So I'm somewhat intimately familiar, but Medicaid is garbage healthcare. It doesn't work well at all. You can only go to a certain collection of hospitals. The lines are really long. The doctors are not as invested, and it runs up the tab for the taxpayers in a very dramatic way. So we already have universal coverage for poor people, and it doesn't work well at all. It doesn't work well whatsoever. We also have universal coverage for veterans at the Veterans Administration, which anyone who has dealt with the VA can tell you it's a total and complete disaster. We also have universal health care coverage for Native Americans. We have an entire division of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which deals with universal health care on Indian reservations. This is even worse than Medicaid and the VA. So we have these kind of, we have these pockets of socialist healthcare and pockets of Medicare for all, if you will, which is really Medicaid for all, and they don't work at all. Delaney last night made the point that Medicare only covers 80% of the bill, while private insurance is 120% of the bill at times. So private insurance actually makes up the difference for the failures of Medicare. It's important to remember that President Trump has reformed the VA. It's gotten better. Over 500 incompetent employees that have allowed veterans to die on waiting lists and have not called veterans back on suicide watch. They have a suicide watch hotline, I should say, a suicide hotline at the Veterans Administration. And there was a whole scandal under the Obama administration, you might remember, when there were people at the VA that didn't even call them back. And guess what? No one was fired under the Obama administration for not even calling back these veterans. Hundreds of employees have been fired under President Trump thanks to the VA reform that he passed. President Trump gets no credit for this amazing, amazing victory. So transitioning back to the debate, Vice President Biden was forced, and again, we should do an, Mr. Producer, make a note, we should do an entire podcast just on healthcare because I find there's so much misinformation about it. And look, it's actually super complicated. And here's kind of a really good rule of thumb. When things are really complicated, it's really good not to have government involved in them because everyone has their own different perspective. Everyone has their own little approach and they want to personalize their healthcare. When things get really personal and things get really complicated, that's a really good reason not to have government bureaucrats involved. It's a really good reason not to have government officials get overly intrigued, if you will, with your healthcare choices or your healthcare decisions. Additionally, why would you want politicians involved in something that's hyper-personal? And here's one of the great contradictions that I find in the entire Democrat messaging is the Democrats will gallivant around and they'll say that government has no place to make women to make decision for women in the healthcare realm when it comes to abortion. That government should stay completely and totally out of abortion. And in the same sentence, they'll say that now government needs to make those very same decisions for Medicare for all, that government should nationalize the healthcare industry, that we should take people's health insurance away, that we should get rid of private insurance, and that we should have nationalized doctors. And this is the plan of Senator Warren and Senator Sanders. I thought you just got done telling me that the government should make people's healthcare decisions for them. So when things are hyper-personal, and I know for me personally, I would have a completely different healthcare plan than some of my friends. And by the way, I exercise quite a lot. I try to eat very healthy. I have different healthcare needs than other people. And so when things are that personal, you should be able to have hyper-personal healthcare delivered right to you. This is not unrealistic. Basically, everything in our economy is hyper-personalized. From your Amazon shopping cart to your iTunes library, why should healthcare be any different? I mean, why should we have a 16th century healthcare system where basically we think that government should run everything? And that's essentially what the Democrats are arguing for. They're arguing for something that's so draconian and so one-size-fits-all that it wouldn't be personalized. It wouldn't be focused on the individual. And so to put it in a box here, I use this quite often. I actually haven't used it in about a year, but when young people support this, it's an iPhone generation voting for a post office party. essentially, we have a whole generation that is so used to ordering Ubers and going to Chipotle and checking out with their QR codes, and they're upset that their Wi-Fi is not loading. And then they want the TSA bureaucrats that can't even check a backpack properly. They want those same people now to get involved in their healthcare. But this is why Vice President Biden was on the defense, because he was forced to defend the indefensible. In fact, let's play some sound right now of Vice President Biden just bumbling through the first portion of the debate.
And buy into a Medicare option. And they can buy the gold plan, and they're not going to have to pay anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Thank you.
And if they don't have any money, they get in free. So this idea is a bunch of malarkey. If you agree with me, go to Joe 30330 and help me in this fight. Thank you very much. 8 more years of Donald Trump will change America in a fundamental way. The America we know will no longer exist.
So there you heard Vice President Biden stumbling and just his inability to be able to compete on the ideological debate in healthcare. And so realize that he's actually getting the least amount of debate time that he's going to get from this point forward. You might say, wait, that doesn't make any sense, Charlie. I thought that he got a lot of debate time. No. As the field narrows, some of these debates, he's going to get 30 and 40 minutes. I mean, as we head closer to Iowa and there's only 5 or 6 contenders left, or when we get to New Hampshire, and it's fair to say that Joe Biden's not going to drop out before Iowa. I think he'll have enough name ID and staying power to sustain himself through South Carolina. There might only be 4 people on the debate stage. He's going to be forced to have really deep policy arguments about this, and he is not ready for primetime at all whatsoever. And so Senator Harris and him went back and forth on healthcare and was forced to defend the indefensible. And again, he just did not look as if he is the best possible person to go up against President Trump. And I'm actually going to say something that is against the conventional wisdom. I actually think President Trump would defeat Joe Biden in a total landslide. I do not buy this conventional media wisdom or the polling whatsoever as it is today that Joe Biden is going to, if it was Joe Biden versus Trump, that Joe Biden would be able to rebuild the Obama coalition. I don't see young women gravitating towards the groping Biden whole thing, and I'm not calling him anything more than the videos that I've seen, because it's not good stuff. And I don't see him being able to rebuild the minority communities the way that Barack Obama did. And I'm going to get to that in a second, because I think there was something really dramatic that was mentioned in this debate that I'm guessing most of the media is going to miss. And I don't see Vice President Biden being able to compete with the energy and the stamina that President Trump has. I mean, President Trump is just a total and complete machine. I mean, the guy does rally after rally, interview after interview, basically doesn't sleep. I mean, the time I have spent with him personally, I mean, I'll tell you, he's the youngest guy in the room. I mean, he spoke to our group of over at Turning Point USA, TPUSA.com. That's TPUSA.com. He spoke to over 1,500 conservative teenagers, and he was like the youngest guy in the room. I mean, he had such charisma and spirit. He was off the charts phenomenal. And so I don't buy into this whole narrative that Joe Biden is the unstoppable force. I don't think he's going to be the nominee, and I don't even think he's the person that has the best chance to beat President Trump in a one-to-one type contest, if you will. I don't think he has the best chance to beat them whatsoever. And so I kind of have a running list here. I mean, of all the times that Joe Biden was cross-examined, it was Biden versus Kamala, it was Biden versus Booker, Biden versus everyone on healthcare. On abortion, it was Biden versus Kamala. It was immigration, Biden versus everyone. And it was a whole kind of the cage issue that just needs to be totally debunked. Again, the children in cages happened under Vice President Biden and President Obama. A climate was Joe Biden versus Inslee and Kamala. And look, if Joe Biden thinks that the pressure was immense now, just wait until this field narrows. Just wait until this field really starts to condense down to 3 or 4 people. The attention is only going to go up. I'll tell you one thing. What I was watching tonight, I was watching the beginnings of President Trump celebrating his reelection. Because if Joe Biden is truly the front runner, if Joe Biden is the best that they have right now, and if Senator Harris is the second best, and last night when the Blue Dogs versus the Bolsheviks, boy, I can just hear the cheers that is going to happen in next November when President Trump gets reelected as President of the United States. All right, listen, everybody. This is really, really important. I'm going to talk about a product that I really care about. This is Vincero Watches. They create exceptionally crafted watches and sell them at a totally fair price. If you're a young man and you don't have a watch, my question to you right now is why? Why do you not have a watch? You need a watch right now. By focusing on meticulous quality control and small batch manufacturing, Vincero has established themselves as the best value in the total industry. You're not going to find a better made watch for this good of a price anywhere else. There's a reason why Vincero has over 16,000 five-star reviews. That's unbelievable when you think about it, because their bold timepieces masterfully blend form and function into an affordable timepiece. Just for my listeners right now, Vincero is offering 15% off your entire order with the code KIRK. Just head to VinceroWatches.com and use the code KIRK, K-I-R-K, for 15% off. That's V-I-N-C-E-R-O. And look, Mr. Producer got a Vincero watch the other day, and I looked at it. I said, what is that? What is that? That's a beautiful watch. I mean, how much you spend on that? A couple thousand dollars? I said, Charlie, I bought it after listening to your ad. It's a Vincero watch. It looks so nice. And guess what? It wasn't a couple thousand dollars. It's super affordable. The Vincero has free worldwide shipping. They have really great designs, super bold. Whether you're a watch connoisseur or just looking for your first timepiece, a Vincero watch is going to exceed your expectations and make you feel so much more confident. I mean, if you're going around out there without a watch, my question is why? And for the young ladies out there, you could get this for your boyfriend, for your brother, for your father, for your uncle. It's a great gift. Right now, remember, my listeners get an extra 15% off. Just use the code KIRK when you check out. So go to VinceroWatches.com. That's V-I-N-C-E-R-O watches.com and use the code K-I-R-K for 15% off your entire order. They've had total style sell out before. So before you do anything else, go pick up your favorite accessory. You'll not be disappointed. And don't forget the code KIRK, K-I-R-K, for 15% off. TaxTheHell.com. What the heck does that mean? I mean, I couldn't believe it when I heard it. All right, the worst mayor in America, total failed mayor. He's an absolute loser. New York City has become a total mess. When I first started Turning Point USA 7 years ago, I used to love to go to New York City. And yes, I used to go under Mayor Bloomberg, who wanted to ban certain kind of soft drinks. But guess what? Mayor Bloomberg was a common sense business guy who had a couple strange social idiosyncratic policy objectives, which is kind of bizarre, where he wanted to end soft drinks. Again, that's what he was known for, but he cleaned up the streets. New York was pro-business. The police loved the Bloomberg mayorship, and he did a terrific job. And then here came this total radical, Bill de Blasio, who's totally destroying New York City. He's a failed mayor. He should not be taken seriously. So what does he say? Let's play the sound right now. Here's Mayor Bill de Blasio, who has ruined one of the, if not the greatest city in America. Play sound of Mayor Bill de Blasio.
If you agree that we can stand up to Donald Trump and we can stand up to the wealthy, then go to taxthehell.com and join us so we can build a country that puts working people first.
Taxthehell.com? That's his whole solution. So his whole thing is we need to tax the hell out of the wealthy. So at least he admits what I have always said, which is socialism is not about helping the poor. It's about hating the rich. He actually is making his entire political campaign about asset confiscation from successful people. And look, let's just kind of go into the entire debate about taxing the rich, because this entire debate gets demagogued so much. And so, look, the slogan of taxing the rich is completely and totally dishonest. And I have to give Jonah Goldberg some credit on a piece he wrote for the American Enterprise Institute. I don't know if Jonah's a fan of mine. He's had some snarky tweets of mine lately. But you know what, Jonah, you deserve credit for doing good work on this article. So I'm going to read from it. So essentially, he says the slogan is dishonest, and it really is dishonest. Rich people, in fact, do pay a lot of taxes. Just so you know, just under half of federal revenue comes from income taxes. So if you define the rich as the top 1%, which is probably too narrow, depending on the region of the country, Jonah writes, the rich pay a big chunk of that. In 2016, according to the Tax Foundation, the top 1% accounted for 37.3% of all income tax revenue, a share that was greater than the bottom 90% of all payers of income tax combined. The top half of taxpayers paid 97% of income taxes. Oh my goodness. So the top 50% pays 97% of all the income taxes. The Tax Policy Center also estimated that 44% of Americans won't pay any federal income taxes for 2018. This is extraordinary. That doesn't mean they don't pay any taxes. Of course, payroll taxes eat up a big chunk of many Americans, where they say, who the hell is FICA? But if you kind of dive even deeper into this, The rich actually pay a disproportionate amount of the taxes. The 1% actually pays more than 1% of all the taxes. They pay more than 10% of all the taxes. In fact, the top Americans in the top 20% pay an estimated 87% of all the income taxes in 2018. This is up from 84% in 2017, which means that the Trump tax cuts actually made the Trump tax code even more progressive and less regressive. So wait, the Trump tax cuts that they say were tax cuts for the wealthy actually made the wealthy's share of paying taxes go up by 3%. That's why, as I've always said, the Trump tax cut was the largest middle class tax cut in American history, something that is not covered by our dishonest media, something that is not covered by these Democrat politicians. So Bill de Blasio, who could never have been a successful person himself, obviously, anyone who hates rich people this much has made an entire career around stealing other people's stuff. Bill de Blasio, I don't think he's funny. I don't think he's entertaining. I think he should be focusing on a city right now that is in a lot of trouble with schools that are broken, taxes that are out of control, police with low morale. I mean, you have right now in New York City, and this is what just upsets me so much, none of these Democrats had any courage to call out the fact that police officers are having water thrown over them and buckets thrown at them. And Bill de Blasio thinks this is perfectly permissible behavior. Bill de Blasio should be totally and completely ashamed of himself, not to mention he's economically illiterate. Again, the Democrat Party is much more focused on hating the rich than helping the poor. And here's an unpopular argument. A functioning free society should encourage more people to be rich. That when you get rich, it doesn't mean somebody else gets poor. If you go to any Turning Point USA conference, and I encourage you to support Turning Point USA in any way that you can, you go to tpusa.com, please support us however you can. Any Turning Point USA conference that you go to, you will hear me say this. Just because you get rich does not mean someone else got poor. If you get rich in a free society, that means other people got rich with you. That means you had to employ other people. You had to probably pay rent somewhere. You had to buy a building. You probably had to borrow money. You had to create a great product, persuade people to buy your product or service, do it over a long period of time, do it again. You had to take an enormous amount of risk. And just because you exceed in 1 year does not mean you're going to exceed in the next year. And so when you finally get to a place that Bill de Blasio describes you as rich, most of the quote-unquote rich people that he describes are people in their 50s and 60s and 70s that over a long period of time have made really good choices, have minimized their debt load, or they have decreased their debt load over a period of time, and they're quote-unquote rich. And so now Bill de Blasio wants to go to taxthehell.com because Bill de Blasio himself could never have been rich in a free society. Because look, you actually look at people like Bernie Marcus. Bernie Marcus is an American hero. Bernie Marcus co-founded Home Depot. Home Depot employs tens of thousands. In fact, Mr. Producer will look up the exact number. I think they employ hundreds of thousands of people. We'll get the exact number. But Home Depot is a true American story. Bernie Marcus had an amazing American entrepreneurial spirit. He didn't start the company till his late 40s or early 50s. Home Depot has made America a better place. Why? Well, as a home improvement store, they were able now to get access to what they needed to be their own carpenter or be their own plumber. It actually lowered the cost of home ownership. Home Depot was one of the main reasons that we've had the growth in the suburbs, which has been a huge benefit to our country over the last 20 or 30 years. And guess what? Bernie Marcus is a billionaire. Okay, and the exact numbers? Home Depot employs 321,000 employees in North America, Mexico, and yes, even some in China. But they employ 321,000 people. We'll get the exact number of how many they employ in America. But nevertheless, they still employ a bunch of people, and they've made a lot of people richer, and a lot of people have bought their products voluntarily. But guess what? The left, the radical left that Bill de Blasio is part of, they wanted to boycott Bernie Marcus just because of his political beliefs a couple weeks ago. They wanted to boycott the hero, Bernie Marcus, because he dared to say something good about President Trump. But guess what? Bernie Marcus did not become a multi-billionaire by going around with a gun stealing money from people. I actually believe Bill de Blasio thinks that there's an entire sector of America that gets rich by doing something so unethical or illegal that it warrants him to steal the money back from them. Why else would he say something such as taxthehell.com? I mean, this is not just class warfare. This is class carnage. I mean, we've always said that, oh, we don't like class warfare. I mean, he wants class carpet bombing, not class warfare. He wants to completely destroy an entire economic band in America. And here's the updated numbers from Home Depot. Again, Mr. Producer is on his best game right now. 413,000 employees for Home Depot, over $100 billion in sales, and they are headquartered in the great city of Atlanta, Georgia, of which I will be visiting very soon. Great city, really good Republican governor who's doing a terrific job there. But guess what? Bernie Marcus became a billionaire. Ooh, the person that Senator Warren and Senator Sanders want to tax. We need a billionaire tax. But what does Bernie Marcus do with his money right now? What has Bernie Marcus done with all the wealth that he's created? Even if Bernie Marcus just held on to the money and kept it in a bank, what do you think banks do with the money? They lend it out. They lend it out to more small businesses. They lend it out so that you could buy a home loan. But he's not doing that. He has an amazing institution called the Marcus Foundation. And through the Marcus Foundation, he's given hundreds of millions of dollars to the Georgia Aquarium and stepped up and built a world-class aquarium in Atlanta, Georgia. Bernie Marcus has given tens of millions of dollars to medical research. He's given tens of millions of dollars to communities in need. He gives the money back. In order to be generous, you must have wealth to be generous in the first place. And how is wealth created? Again, I feel as if Bill de Blasio slept through the entire part of the school system, maybe the school system didn't teach it in the first place, that talked about economics. In a market, you must create wealth to give that money away. And eventually, you're going to run out of other people's money to give away. However, just using the singular example, Bernie Marcus, and I could use dozens, I could use hundreds of examples. And you know what? I think we should actually do this on the Charlie Kirk Show from now to the election and highlight people that have gotten to billionaire status and how they've made the world a better place and how they didn't get there by being robber barons and putting guns to people's head and saying, show me the money. You know, Jerry Maguire put a gun in someone's mouth. I actually believe there's an entire faction of the Democrat Party that they when they asked an honest question, they believe these are robber barons. And sure, I'll agree there's some people in America that make money more dishonestly than others. I kind of agree with Tucker Carlson that the payday business is not exactly my favorite type of business. But just demonizing an entire portion of American society that has had an unbelievable amount of risk and courage, that American entrepreneurial spirit, and then they generously give that money back. And his perspective is taxthehell.com. I mean, there's a reason why more innovation has come out of America than anywhere else in the world. You need to be able to become a millionaire and billionaire. You need to be able to see at the end, I too can be super successful. If I work 7 days a week and I take out a second mortgage on my house and I put everything on the line, there might be a reward for me at the end. And Bill de Blasio wants to completely and totally obliterate that altogether. I wouldn't expect anything less than the worst mayor in New York history and the worst sitting mayor in America. So now Cory Booker also had a really interesting insight. And here's some insight that you're not going to hear anywhere else. You're going to hear this exclusively on The Charlie Kirk Show. So Cory Booker talked about how we need to win back African-American communities. I want to just do a hard stop right here. At Turning Point USA, led by for a year and a half by Candace Owens, we had our Black Leadership Summit. We still have, I should say, I correct myself. Coming up this fall, we have our Black Leadership Summit. If you're a young Black freedom lover, please go to tpusa.com/BLS. That's tpusa.com/BLS. And if anyone listening to this wants to support the Black Leadership Summit, please go to tpusa.com, press donate, and where it says in honor of, or you know, kind of an area that you can leave some kind of a description of your gift, just put Black Leadership Summit, because we are in need of support to be able to make this the largest ever Black Leadership Summit. Our goal is over 1,500. Our goal is 1,500 Black freedom lovers to come to Washington, D.C. And so Cory Booker had a really revealing moment where he said that we need to win back the best constituency, which is Black women. They're the most loyal Democrat voters, which, interestingly enough, Black women are people that are actually disenfranchised the most by Democrat policies, whether it be the horrible failing schools, the lack of school choice, the lack of economic opportunity, the rise in gang violence, the fatherlessness, all of which Black women are really subjugated to, if you will, by the horrible Democrat policy decisions. So Cory Booker first started by saying something, we need to win back this constituency. Okay, not any, no real red flags there. Then he kind of transitions And he says that he claimed there was suppression of the black vote, which, again, there's no evidence of this whatsoever. I actually, and I agree with Candace Owens and our spokesperson, Rob Smith, and Brandon Tatum, who's a dear friend, where he's, this is a horribly racist thing to say, to actually say that that there is suppression in the black community, that somehow the black community is too stupid and too dumb to be able to get a voter ID. And again, don't take my word for it. Take Rob Smith or Candace Owens or Brandon Tatum or David Harris Jr. It's so patronizing, and it's honestly really racist. It's really racist and super insulting to the black community to say that you can't do that, you are too stupid, or you are not unable to be able to get a voter ID. And by the way, can someone explain this to me? Can someone explain to me how someone who's a descendant of a slave is supposed to be able to prove that they're a descendant of the slave and they can get their paperwork together for that, but they somehow can't apply for an ID to go vote? Again, Cory Booker makes this horrible patronizing argument to kind of black voters. And I actually think black voters are waking up, because his argument then transitioned to kind of what I saw as a distress signal. Because he said that I'm going to win back Michigan by rebuilding this coalition. And I'm paraphrasing, and we'll play the sound in a second, because I want to just kind of qualify the sound before we play it. I want to preface it, because then he goes on to say something along the lines of, you know what, let's actually just play it. Let's play the clip, so I don't have to paraphrase it, and you'll hear it for yourself.
This is a case for the Democratic Party. The truth will set us free. We lost the state of Michigan because everybody from Republicans to Russians were targeting the suppression of African-American voters. We need to say that. If the African-American vote in this state had been like it was 4 years earlier, we would have won the state of Michigan. We need to have a campaign that is ready for what's coming. An all-out assault, especially on the most valuable voter group in our, in fact, the highest performing voter group in our coalition, which is black women.
So there you heard, he says that we to re-engage. Well, in order to re-engage something, that means that previously you've disengaged. So essentially, Cory Booker, who's one of the only African-American candidates running for the presidency, is essentially saying, we have a problem right now, folks, in the black community. And he's pointing to 2016 as the data point. What he's saying is President Trump overperformed in the black community. And guess what? This was all before President Trump had achieved the lowest ever black unemployment rate, achieved the opportunity zones, achieved prison reform. I think Cory Booker is communicating directly to some anxiety within the Democrat Party that the black vote might be cracking, that what Candace Owens is doing and what Rob Smith and Brandon Tatum and David Harris and these amazing black conservatives that I've been able to witness and just be fans of for the last couple years, I think it's actually cracking. He wouldn't go out of his way to say that if that anxiety was not present within the Democrat base, because your time is so valuable when you're actually doing a debate that you don't want to talk about things that wouldn't communicate to get yourself more votes or get you higher in the polls. And one of the first states is South Carolina, and the black vote is super important in the Democrat South Carolina debate. But he's talking to this, and there is some slippage here. There's some drop off. Now, whether it's a 5%, 10%, 15%, or 20%, look, Donald Trump is not going to win the black vote, but if he wins 15% of the black vote, he will get convincingly reelected. If Donald Trump wins 12% of the black vote, if Donald Trump wins 9% of the black vote, he is reelected in a way that no one thought possible. And could it just be that the lowest ever black poverty rate, the lowest ever black unemployment rate, a massive increase in black-owned businesses, opportunity zones, and urban centers that are actually starting to be focused on are turning to become more Republican? And the final point is this, on this whole issue with Cory Booker, if President Trump wasn't focusing on the inner cities, would this anxiety actually be happening? President Trump focused his last couple days on Baltimore. He focused on Baltimore. And look, you start to see as a parallel to that, Cory Booker talking about how there's a problem in the black community that we need to re-engage. Hold on a second. You wouldn't need to re-engage Cory Booker if things were going swimmingly in Baltimore and going great in Michigan and Cleveland and some of these other cities like Philadelphia. Some polls have Donald Trump polling as high as 20%. That's right. Polling as high as 20%. This spells huge trouble. And I think that's just a fun little nugget that you can pick out of this debate. It's not going to get a lot of coverage. Again, I like to look at places, and this is why what we try to do differently at the Charlie Kirk Show. Instead of all just the conventional, the horse race, who did here? I'm trying to look at actually what's going on a deeper level and try to find more texture within the Democrat Party, and that's what I think makes our podcast different and what makes our show different is that we try to see things before they happen and try to see things that aren't being seen and try to give you the historical context and some data and some facts behind it so that you can be a more equipped viewer and hopefully voter in the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. The final clip I want to play is this. Actually came right after, believe it or not, is what Kamala Harris, Senator Harris, makes the baseless assertion that President Trump has not kept his promises. Let's play the sound right now.
First of all, Donald Trump came in making a whole lot of promises to working people that he did not keep. He said he was going to help farmers. He said he was going to help auto workers. Farmers are now looking at bankruptcy, soybeans rotting in bills. Auto workers, we expect perhaps hundreds of thousands will be out of jobs by the end of the year.
And so Senator Harris first started with the attack on farmers, which first and foremost, President Trump has more times than not explained that he has put forth additional federal assistance to farmers to help them out because China is putting forth repercussions on the tariff for the trade war. But let's just talk about this. Let's just talk about the auto workers because Senator Harris is trying to pander to a Detroit Macomb County audience in Michigan, and she did so horribly and without evidence. So let's just talk about some facts. Automakers have already invested $6 billion in the United States because of the new trade deal, the USMCA, essentially the new NAFTA. Since President Trump was elected, the auto industry has added 109,500 jobs. Unbelievable. While wages for motor vehicles and part dealers have increased by 10%. The good news continues. Fact. Fiat Chrysler is building a $1.6 billion assembly plant on Detroit's east side that will contribute 6,400 jobs. And guess what? A lot of those jobs are going to be people of color. While Ford announced that they will build a new plant in Michigan to build autonomous vehicles, which is expected to create 900 new jobs. So Senator Harris is just making stuff up. But let's just go even deeper than that. She's trying to say that President Trump didn't keep his promises. Really? Well, we have Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court and Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, plus over 140 circuit court judges. The stock market has reached an all-time high. Consumer confidence at a 17-year high. More than 5 million jobs have been created. Mortgage applications to a 10-year high. Unemployment rate at a 17-year low. We have the Women in Entrepreneurship Act that got no coverage whatsoever. President Trump has gutted the Obama-era regulations. He has cut 22 regulations for every new one regulation put on the books. He has ended the war on coal. He has weakened Dodd-Frank regulations. He's promoted buying and hiring America, which is working. He's secured major investment from major businesses all across the country. We have seen finally the wall being built. He's fought back against sanctuary cities. We have the Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement, which is a bill signed under Republican Congress that no one talks about. President Trump has had the greatest crackdown on human trafficking, which resulted in the closure of, I think it was called Backpage.com or something. It was horrible. Backpage.com, which wasn't closed under Obama, which is a child sex trafficking website. We have seen huge changes in the IRS and no longer targeting conservative groups. Guess what? ISIS is totally and completely destroyed. He's actually reduced the cost of F-35 fighters. He signed an executive order that's a 5-year lobbying ban. He sanctioned Iran over their Iran program. He moved the embassy to Jerusalem. He reduced the White House payroll. He's donating his entire presidential salary. He repealed the individual mandate tax. He signed an executive order to protect police officers. He signed an executive order to target drug cartels. He signed an executive order for religious freedom. The Department of Justice is finally targeting MS-13. We are energy independent for the first time in American history. We have massive economic growth that is higher than any sort of expert would have ever projected whatsoever. He signed over 130 bills into law. And by the way, I'm missing some things here. He approved the Keystone Pipeline. I mean, he approved the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I'm even missing some of his biggest accomplishments. I know he signed prison reform. He signed VA reform. He signed the right to try. And Senator Harris says he doesn't keep promises. I mentioned the embassy to Jerusalem. He recognized the Golan Heights in Israel. He's defunded the Palestinian Authority. He's partially defunded Planned Parenthood, and that needs to happen even more. President Trump is a promise keeper in chief. No matter what Senator Harris or the Democrats try to say, this president has achieved more in 2.5 years than career politicians have achieved in the last 30 years. They have got us into endless wars overseas. And again, I just have to say, I'm so just worn down by having to hear the Democrats misrepresent Trump as something he's not. He is the opposite of a warmonger. He has kept us out of at least 5 conflicts overseas. He's kept us out of the conflict in Venezuela, North Korea, Iran, Syria, and with Russia. That's 5 right there. We would be in 5 wars right now if Hillary Clinton was president. Hillary Clinton was no different than the war-happy Bush regime that wanted to use American troops for their own war games while our own nation state dissolved and was destroyed from within. President Trump has been the opposite of a war-happy ruler. In fact, it's the exact opposite. But look, I'll clarify this because Media Matters might say something. Maybe not 5, but at least one of those 5. Okay, at least one of those 5 guaranteed would have turned into some kind of conflict. Okay, but it's fair to say that whether it be Iran, Syria, Venezuela, Russia, what was the other one that I used? It could be Libya too. Libya is a complete and total disaster. I said Venezuela, Iran, Syria, Russia, North Korea, of course, North Korea, one of those 5 would have resulted in some form of armed conflict. And so look, who was the big winner of this debate? President Donald Trump was the big winner of this debate. Unfortunately, the moderates did not get as much airtime or as much coverage as last night. I hope, again, selfishly, to get the president reelected, which is the best thing for the country. I think it's good if he runs against a radical. However, I think just for the country, I wish it wasn't radicals versus common sense President Trump. I wish it was someone that had some decent worldview. Unfortunately, I don't see that happening whatsoever. And look, you have to understand that Biden had to hold down the moderate wing tonight. And that's another big takeaway, is Biden is trying to straddle the Bolsheviks and trying to straddle the blue dogs, trying to have Biden put squarely right in the middle. And so as we go into the future of these other debates, we're going to be analyzing everything that I said, what is seen, what is unseen. And that is what we do here on The Charlie Kirk Show. And I have one final ask for you. Please, right now, go to Apple Podcasts or at your podcast delivery system. Please press subscribe. Give us those 5-star ratings and leave us a review. It helps us tremendously. And I do want to give one shout out. A lot of people are saying very good things about Andrew Yang. I will say one good thing that I'm glad that he addressed, which is something that is near and dear to my heart. And then I'll make a prediction about Andrew Yang right after that, which is that I'm glad Andrew Yang addressed the suicide epidemic in America. I have lost dear friends to suicide. Suicide is a horrendous thing. It is an unexplainable tragedy. It is something that is uniquely Western problem. Even the poorest countries in the world do not have a suicide epidemic like the wealthiest countries do. Suicide is a problem of prosperity, and it's something that we are struggling with in the Western world. And it's an identity problem. It's a fatherlessness problem. It's a broken family problem. It's a cultural decay problem. And so, thank you, Andrew Yang, for shining light on that. And if anyone listening to this podcast has any issues with that or is struggling with suicide, please go to the suicide hotline. I think it's the Mr. Producer will find it right now while we're wrapping up the show. And please, if you have someone who's even vaguely conveying the thoughts, just give them this hotline. It's 1-800-273-8255. Again, I've lost dear friends to suicide. It's something that ruins entire communities and leaves people with no direction whatsoever. It's a horrible thing. A horrible thing to experience tangentially. Again, the phone number is 1-800-273-8255. So thank you, Andrew Yang, for shining a light on that. I do believe that is I believe it's a national crisis that is not being, that is not getting near enough attention. And we have so many amazing people that unfortunately make the decision to voluntarily exit from life. And that's just a total tragedy. Again, the number is 1-800-273-8255. I will say, in a couple of years, give Andrew Yang 4 years, he's going to be a conservative, because what he's saying is actually not doctrinaire leftism. I think he just used the Democrat kind of primary, if you will, to elevate his viewpoint for universal basic income, or he might, in the very least, become a libertarian. And so in closing, please, if you're interested in Turning Point USA, please go to tpusa.com. Give a donation, get involved. You're a student. We want you involved. We want you on the campus. We love working with you guys. At Turning Point USA, we're growing like gangbusters, and it's thanks to you guys that we are able to continue to grow. And if you can chip in, please do so. We have over 700 700. That's right. We had over 700 new chapter requests. That's 700. I mean, it's an unbelievable number. 700 new chapter requests after our Teenage Student Action Summit. It's amazing. And our Student Action Summit coming up in December, our applications are going to be going live very, very soon. And you can find all of that on tpusa.com. Again, that's tpusa.com. And please, we are supported by you guys supporting our sponsors and also you guys going and pressing subscribe and getting friends to do that. Go and leave reviews. Tell us your thoughts. We truly and totally appreciate the support of the fastest growing conservative podcast in America, the show that gives you the facts, no BS, and goes straight to the issues that no one else is talking about, and hopefully is able to have you be able to have a takeaway and learn something from each one of those issues. So please give us that subscribe, leave that rating. Until next time, this is Charlie Kirk signing off of The Charlie Kirk Show.
Hey, everybody, it's Laura Ingraham, and I'd like to invite you to check out my new show, The Laura Ingraham Podcast, exclusively on Podcast One. So join me 3 days a week as I cover politics, the culture, everything in between, laugh, learn, all at the same time. We got you locked and loaded, and you'll be ready for the week, ready for the month. And it's very easy. You just subscribe today, download new episodes exclusively at podcastone.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And you know mine's going to be one of your newest podcasts.